Welcome to Raising Connections. I'm your host, Rayshan Mayer. This is the program where we talk about your critters, companions, commerce, and agriculture, and all of the connections between them. We have an interesting guest with us today, and many connections to the horse world, and most of you probably know him, Neil Agate. Welcome.
Good morning.
You have many of these connections, and let's start off with just the one most people from the Maryland Horse Council will recognize you for, former president and former vice president of the Maryland Horse Council.
That's right.
What allowed you to assume those leadership positions? Was it something that you just said, aha, I want to do? Or did you have leadership experience coming into these positions?
Well, I would say I had leadership experience in the business world with businesses that I've either worked for or run. And when I first got involved with the Maryland Horse Council, probably 12, 15 years ago, I didn't really have any kind of desires or thoughts about leadership. I had kind of felt I had lived in my little silo of the polo world and knew there was so much more to the Maryland horse world. So I kind of jumped in and then just slowly sort of found out more different aspects of the Maryland Horse Council and kind of got involved with them. And then one day someone said, do you want to be vice president? So.
Oh my. There is a difference in the board. Folks who have not served on a board may not know that there is the board and then there is the board. So there is an executive board and there is a board of directors or an executive board and an at-large board. Could you explain those to us?
I think so, but I think they've changed. So we used to have with the Maryland Horse Council, we had a board. And actually, when I first started, I think the board was about 80 people, because just about every organization in Maryland that was, I think it was nonprofits and maybe there was one other category, had a seat on the board. And that was really very hard to manage and very hard to make productive. So we consolidated the board and we came up with the different categories for kind of individuals, businesses, which is now professionals, and then nonprofits. And I may be missing one.
It's a little bit structured, so you can include everyone.
Yeah, exactly. So everyone has representation. It got watered down because with 80 board members, at least 50% of them weren't really active. And that meant that certain aspects of the industry weren't really represented. So at that point, when we moved down to about 25 members of the board, which is where we are now, we did have an executive committee, which was essentially the officers and a couple of others. We've moved away from that model, again, to give all of the board members more, not control, but more input in things that are going. So we now have monthly board meetings, which I know you know about because you're a member of our board.
Absolutely.
But there is still an inordinate percentage of the work is done by the president, in this case, Kim Egan. And before that, I had that role. So I know what I speak about.
It has a lot of work.
It does. And in my case, when I was vice president, we were kind of, I say, this kind of sleepy little association representing the horse world. We had a part-time administrator, essentially, who ran her own company and administered the horse council with about probably 200 or so members. The two main things we did, one was represent the horse industry in Annapolis, and two was we had quarterly meetings when everyone used to get together. Right around the time I took over as president, two big things happened to this council. One was we were approached by Crystal Pickett, who had run the equity for 20 years, saying she wanted to sell it and she would like to sell it to the Horse Council and have it be the official publication of the Horse Council, which it now is. And we also got a grant from the Right Horse Foundation to start a program called METS, which was the Maryland Equine Transition Service, which was our answer to the large amount of horses that were being given up for adoption or in some cases dumped, basically. And we set up METS to be a matchmaking service between people who, for whatever reason, could not take care of their horses and people looking for horses. And we sat in the middle and did various tasks. And so we got this large grant of about $750,000 to start METS. So what I thought was going to be a very part-time role as president for at least a couple of years was pretty close to full-time for me. And I loved it. I mean, it was a great experience. I really enjoyed the equity aspect of it. I think we were able to do some really fun things and move some of the technical things, which is my background, forward a little bit with some of the software we use to manage it.
What year would it have been that METS and the publication, the Equiary, would have come on board? Was that just right before COVID?
I think we started talking end of 2015. I think it was 2016.
So going from a board of 80 down to a board of 25 and then adding a tremendous amount of incoming information. Not only technology changes happened at that point, the Equiary, which was a published periodical, coming on and bringing with that a house, a literal house, yep. and a place and employees, staff.
Yep.
That's a huge
yep.
growth.
Salaries, budgets. Yeah. Before the Equiary, we had to file taxes and stuff, but I think it was a postcard thing that said we broke even. So it wasn't really much of an effort to basically having to do quarterly filings of this and that. Then there was also the piece of merging a nonprofit with a for-profit and what aspects of it were covered by taxes and not. And so there was all of those kind of jugglings.
So it's a wonderful thing. Lots of hands in the pie. And that's a heck of a leadership piece to steer through there. So we've gone from 80 to 25, and then it was an executive board, so a steering committee. And that executive board mm-hmm. would be made up of the usual characters, a president, a vice president, a secretary, a treasurer, maybe a parliamentarian, yeah. a group of people that was a small group that made a lot of decisions. And then as time went yeah. along and things became more comfortable, the steering committee expanded. So there's still the executive committee, those familiar group of people, but then yeah. an at-large members of the board.
But a lot of it was on trust, and not that I had planned to be close to full time, but I was really, I mean, the kind of the, if you will, the buck stopped with me during that period. And certainly after a couple of months, I knew the executive committee and the board well enough, and they trusted me to make the decisions. And I think that's a big issue. When people join a board, they think, oh, well, now I'm kind of, I've got a voice. And yes, you've got a voice. If you want to commit, you have a voice on many things. And the more time you're willing to commit, probably the more places your voice will be heard. In my case, I mean, I said this to, well, definitely the executive committee and probably the board, is I've run my own companies for 35, 40 years. And so I am more likely to, when a problem comes to me, to make a decision and move forward, rather than to say, well, let's have a board meeting in 2 weeks and make a decision. And then by that time, an opportunity is gone or whatever. I mean, the only exception to that, because I was very nervous about it, was the actual acquisition of the Equiary, which I really dragged my feet and tried to make sure we got as many people involved in that one as possible.
I can only imagine that's a huge, huge investment. It is bricks and mortar, it's staff, it's, and like you said, it's going from a nonprofit status with a postcard for taxes to a full business entity, which allowed the sponsorship and the income and the representation just to expand.
And the toughest thing for me, and I've had it several times in my business career, is having people's salary depend on what you're doing. Certainly for the first year or so, that wasn't an issue. But then when COVID came and you're kind of, how are we going to get advertisers and how are we going to do this? It's a stressful endeavor.
Absolutely. In owning our own business for 20 some years, the most stressful part is making payroll in those early years, making sure everything's covered.
After I sold my first company, I swore I was never going to have salaries. And in my regular business now, I am all subcontractors and they are all paid for what work they do. So I don't have to worry about if we lose a client, I have to pay someone and I don't have the money to pay them. But we don't have that luxury in most businesses.
Anyone who thinks business is easy has never really been in business. When you brought in the Equiary and that really boosted and expanded the reach of the Maryland Horse Council, Metz was also part of this. And Metz came in as the incubator portion of the Maryland Horse Council.
Yes, in a way. An incubator, I think, is a part of it. It was a very conscious decision. As a bit of background, Stuart Pittman, who was president prior to Jane Siegel, who I succeeded, he was very influential in the push to get rid of the shipping of horses. The slaughterhouses were all closed down in the U.S. Most unwanted horses were shipped either to Canada or to Mexico for slaughter. And while the slaughter wasn't even the worst part of it was the conditions in which they were shipped. So we, as the Maryland Horse Council, were one of the first horse councils in the country to sign on to a bill to try and eradicate those shipping of horses across the borders. But as Stuart very correctly said, if you don't do that, that's not going to get rid of the unwanted horses. They're just going to end up getting in even worse conditions in their current states or being dropped off in people's backyards, which happened a lot. So we as a horse council said we have to do something about that. And the standard sort of horse rescue sanctuary type of model required a lot of infrastructure. Even if you bought a 20-acre farm to house them on, that's not going to last forever. You're going to outrun that. You're going to have to buy more land and get more people and feed more horses. So we went with the what I call the virtual approach, which is we wanted to basically help speed up that system. So we, again, we sat in the middle. If you had a horse for any reason in Maryland that you could not support, you could call Mets, you could talk through all the options. We would send someone out to check on the horse, document the horse. We'd put it up in our listings that were initially for people who we had certified as kind of capable of taking horses. So we were kind of oiling that machine. And that was kind of the main goal of Mets.
And that program grew and was successful at actually...
It was.
It morphed. The Maryland Horse Council served as that incubator that allowed those ideas to come together. And then it was exactly. rehomed into other horse organizations. So it left...
Exactly. Days End Farm had been part of the discussion right from the beginning. As an organization, the Maryland Horse Council, we obviously raise funds to support the Maryland horse industry, but raising funds to support a program like Mets is a whole different scale. And that's one that we couldn't as an organization handle. So that's why it made so much sense to transition it to Days End, who is literally 200 yards up the road from the Equerry and Horse Council offices. It also filled in a part of their mission because they are very focused on institutional takeovers. That's not the word, but they don't take owner surrenders typically. So this helped, but they always got a lot of calls, and probably most of the referrals for Mets came through Days End. So having the Mets program within Days End allows them to handle owner transfers. This has worked out well for them.
The Maryland Horse Council is really unique in that it is a trade group, but it sits in the middle. And just like the logo or the tagline says, representing, uniting, and educating the equine community. There are so many equine organizations out there, and the folks in the middle, is that the Maryland Horse Council?
Yes. I like to think of it as, I mean, there are two aspects of it. One is the direct individual members, but the other is the other membership organizations. I want to say that we've counted there are about 200 horse-oriented membership organizations in the state of Maryland.
200 so horse? Wait a minute. I've got to get my head around that. 200 yep. horse organizations yep. in the state of Maryland.
When you look at all of the disciplines that have associations, all of the breeds that have associations, all of the regional groups within Maryland that have associations, and some of them are small, but some of them are quite significant. So what we're able to offer, especially to the smaller ones, is kind of an amplifier for their voice, and especially when we got the Equerry. We'd always have association members who would, they'd come to our meetings and they'd speak to the people who were at the meetings. And so that was their way of not only getting out their message, but also letting other people know what they do. There are a lot of things that we talk about a lot that we probably haven't fully realized. And I think that's one within the Maryland Horse Council, is that being that speaker, if you will, or that amplifier for the small association messages. And I think the Equerry can do a really good job of that.
When we come back, let's continue this conversation about your vision and how things have morphed, and we have to. We can't have an interview with you without talking about polo. Join me, Raishan Mayer, from Mariah Bell Manor Kennel, for our new adventure, Living Life Tails Up podcast, combining everyday life with what goes on at the kennel and farm, a bit of humor, some ideas, and some positive happy bubbles. We're living tails up, nose down, and staying on track. We hope to see you on Living Life Tails Up for 5 to 10 minutes worth of happy, happy bubbles shooting out there in the atmosphere. See you soon.